supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, all of us have been tempted by those wonderful supermarket herbs with their roots still exposed. Those living herbs, why, we can plant those and get them to grow for us, can't we? Well, no, we can't. And I'll tell you why we can't and what we can do instead after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Hetty, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, good. Am I getting your name right? Is it Hetty?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
You got it right.
And what's that derivative of, or so to speak?
It's Hedwig. It's a German name.
Oh, okay. Sure. Made famous on Broadway. You know. Where are you, Hetty?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Well, that's a big state. You know, the turnpike goes from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. And, you know, people on the West Coast think that's right next to each other. They think we shop in each other's.
I live in Altoona.
Oh, I know where Altoona is. Sure, sure.
Yeah.
All right. What can we do for Hetty in Altoona?
Well, around Christmas time, you can get a lot of those Norfolk pine trees. They come sometimes decorated with little balls on them.
Yeah.
And I love them. And every time I get them, though, it dies before summer even comes. So I'm wondering what I can do to get some and keep them alive.
Well, when I first researched this many years ago when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine, I knew they weren't true pines, that they weren't in the same genus as a real pine tree. And the term Norfolk pine is doubly wrong to some degree because we think it's from right next to Virginia Beach. And instead, it refers to an island that is kind of near Australia.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not a pine tree, and it's not from our hemisphere. Other than that, you know, the name is really helpful. So these are really nice, what they call specimen plants in Australia and New Zealand and these islands. You know, these things grow in the wild, and they can achieve a pretty good size. But they are stone-cold tropical plants. They do not want any kind of chill. Norfolk pines are relatively easy to take care of if you know what to do. They like bright light, but never direct sunshine.
Okay.
So they don't go outside in the summer, for instance. These are truly houseplants. They're indoors all 12 months. They can't stand drying out. Now, that makes for a delicate balance. So you always want to make sure if there's decorative foil around the pot, you get rid of that. But after that, so that the, you know, water can drain out and it doesn't sit inside like a foil bathtub. So you want to make sure that the mix it's in, the soil-free mix, is pretty much constantly moist. But you don't want it to be sopping wet. You don't want water to be in the plate that you got underneath to protect the surface or anything like that.
Okay.
It is death to keep it near a heat source, like a hot air vent or a radiator or anything like that.
That's not good, you said?
That's the worst. That's death on a stick.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't want to be near a heat source. They like a moist compost, but you can't, what's called a moist compost in the British gardening books, but, you know, whatever's in the pot. And they would love to be misted in the winter. You know, just plain water from a mister, because we forget until we put on a sweater and then electrocute our spouse, you know, how dry our air is indoors in most homes in the winter.
Yes. Okay.
So you can keep the plant moist, but the top of the plant likes having moisture. These are kind of rainforest plants. That's why they don't want direct sun. You know, they grow in a damp, kind of moist environment with dappled sunlight. And they get a regular misting from the sky. So that's pretty much the secret. If you don't let them dry out, you miss them. They do prefer cool temperatures in the wintertime.
Okay.
You know, they don't mind dropping down to like 50 or 55. And then in the summertime, they don't mind if it's like 70 degrees inside or 75. So even though they're from a land.
What about fertilizer?
Oh, they don't need fertilizer. You know, houseplant fertilizers kill houseplants. They're sold by the same people. They sell you the fertilizer so it kills the plant, so you have to go out and buy another one. Then you buy more fertilizer.
All right. Well, that's great. You helped me a lot, Mike. I appreciate your time.
All right. My pleasure. Good luck with your non-pine that is not from Norfolk, Virginia.
All right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. You take care.
Yeah,
bye. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Dorothy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. How are you?
Right now, I am about as good as I have been in quite a while. Dorothy, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
And where is Dorothy great?
I'm in the northeastern corner of Elkton, Maryland.
Oh, near Our Lady of the Highway in northeast Maryland?
Much closer, really, to Newark, Delaware, where you must put that accent on the second syllable.
Yes,
the University of Delaware.
I have been learned by my listeners over the years that if you're in Jersey, it's Newark. And if you're in the small wonder of a state, it is the Newark, because Noah apparently tired of the old one, you know.
Right, and my house is actually so close to the state line that I'm closer to the college than I am to my post office.
All right, what can we do for Dorothy in the Twilight Zone?
Well, as you know, if you're caring for an elder parent, you have a choice of paying to put them someplace or you bring them home, and you don't dare leave the house without paying somebody by the hour to stay with them, or you're guilty of felony neglect. So not wanting to do that, I'm having to be careful with my pennies. And I just don't feel like I can afford to bring home bags and bags of potting soil, even if I could escape the house frequently enough to do that, nor have a truck come in. So if I have no soil, but I have my rinsed out eggshells and my vegetable peels and my fruit garbage, can I take the dried leaves in my yard and just stack them up alternately with that stuff and create a compost pile?
Well, of course, you could stack cars up out there, too, but it probably wouldn't make compost any faster. Do you have any way to shred those leaves?
Not really, no.
See, the problem with whole leaves is that they take forever to break down. The other problem is when you have an open pile like that, even if it's enclosed by a wire bin, you're going to be attracting raccoons and rats and other vermin to it.
Ooh, we don't want that.
And you said you're pinching pennies. For somewhere between $75 and $100, you can get delivered to your home flat, assembled by you into a big rectangle, a sealed black plastic composter that has a locking lid.
And I have been eyeballing the tumblers and wondering about that.
The problem with the tumblers is turning the crank gets old on day three.
Okay.
And there's no ground contact, so earthworms can't move in and out. So especially if you're not going to do anything to shred your leaves, you need the help of the earthworms being able to come up into the bottom, because the bottom is open in these compost bins. It's the top and the sides that's sealed.
Okay.
So then earthworms, on a nice warm day, even in winter, are going to come up and they're going to work your pile. And then when it gets too cold or too hot, they're going to retreat back down into the ground. But that is the huge advantage. Also, again, the black plastic composters, like the Soil Saver and the Compost Digester, there's like several models out there. They fold flat for shipping. They come in like six flat panels. They assemble quite easily, and they can hold a good amount of material. And the idea is not to layer the compost, but to try to mix your leaves in with the kitchen waste as much as possible. Break that kitchen waste down. Smash up the eggshells, chop up the garbage, run it through a blender so that the particle size is small and the compost can happen as quickly as possible. Just make sure that over half of the pile is shredded leaves. The problem with compost in the Northeast is even if you shredded your leaves and you limited the kitchen waste and put in a lot of coffee grounds and cooked it up hot, most homemade compost in our region really isn't ready until July or August. So the first year, you know, you either have to work a year ahead or you really do want to import some compost. But there should be free compost available to you at your local municipalities. And if you go online, go to youbetyourgarden.org, our website, go to Garden Answers A to Z, look under C for compost. There is an article about how to test free municipal compost to make sure that it doesn't have any herbicide residues in it and that it's not weedy.
Okay.
And you, it costs you nothing to do the test. You just go get a sample, you bring it home, fill two containers, you water one alone, and then in the other one you plant some seeds. So if the watered one with no seeds grows a lot, you know it's too weedy to use. And if the one that you put the seeds in, the seeds are all stunted, you know it's contaminated. But if number one stays clean and number two looks good, then you don't have to buy anything.
There you go. Thanks again.
Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Brandywine 100 Library in North Wilmington, Delaware on Wednesday evening, February 22nd, and at the Capitol Garden Show in Chantilly, Virginia on Saturday and Sunday, February 25th and 26th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and how to grow your own indoor herbs. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we have all been tempted by those supermarket herbs, those live herbs in the plastic sleeves where you can see those beautiful roots exposed. Why? We can take all the herb off them, then we can get them to grow again, can't we? Well, no, we can't. We'll explain why and what your better options are after lots of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Brad, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, Brad. Where are you?
I'm in Sinking Spring, Pennsylvania, just right outside of Reading.
All right. What can I do for Brad in the home of one of the great minor league ballparks in all of America?
Well, we just moved, so I'm kind of starting with a brand new slate in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty big for us. I used to have a 30-foot by 30-inch garden. That was all I had. now I have 90 feet by 200 feet to work with.
Okay.
And I wondered what you would suggest for starting. I know you've recommended in the past on your show, I think, and in places that you ordered like a giant tractor trailer of mushroom soil to begin with.
Right.
I wondered if I should do the similar thing and if it should be raised beds or if I should go straight on the ground.
Oh, no. You've never heard me endorse flat earth gardening. Now, are you in the city? Are you in the suburbs? Are you closer to Wyomissing? You know,
We're in the suburbs, yeah.
Because I would still want to get the soil tested for lead before I started messing around in it.
Okay.
So get a sample, send it off to Penn State, go on their website. Their lead test and their soil test is very inexpensive. But mushroom soil is not a static thing, man. There is fresh mushroom soil coming right out of the farm, the stuff that you smell on a hot summer night.
Right.
That's too hot to use for gardening. Aged mushroom soil, which has no heat and very little smell, that's much better for gardening, but it still should be mixed with some topsoil or some perlite because it's very rich. You also want to make sure that the soil that came out of the mushroom farm was steam treated at the end. Because as you can imagine, the soil that comes out of a mushroom farm still has billions of mushroom spores in it. So before they send it out to landscapers and gardeners and other uses, they either put it in a big steamer or they spray it with formaldehyde.
So,
aren't you glad you asked up front?
Would you recommend staying away from mushroom soil then?
It's an absolute perfect resource for you because it's so abundant and it's so local. The carbon footprint will be so small. But you do want to check around. You want to call various suppliers. You may even be able to get the soil from an organic mushroom farm.
Okay.
But you definitely want aged, and you definitely want steam treated, and then you definitely want to cut it with either good, high-quality black top soil or lots and lots of perlite. Then what you want to do is divide your backyard into sections, 2-foot walking lanes.
Okay.
And then areas that will become raised beds that are no wider than 4 feet, because you're never going to step into that soil.
Right. Okay.
But it sounds like you have a long backyard. So, for instance, as long as you don't mind walking, the raised bed can be 20, 30 feet long.
Gotcha.
As long as it's no more than 4 feet wide and there are 2 feet of walking lanes all around.
Okay.
I would advise you just to not even bother with your native soil. Maybe just till it up a little bit before you install the raised bed so that there's good drainage if it's clay. But you have the right plan. Frame out a bunch of raised beds. Fill them with a good mix of aged, clean mushroom soil and topsoil. And go slow. Build a couple of beds a year because you're going to – no, I'm serious.
Yeah.
A lot of people –
yeah, there's too many project ideas already.
Exactly. So, you know, people are going to try to build 18 beds their first year. They're going to burn out. They're going to hate gardening.
Right.
You know, start out with like 4x8 beds. Or, again, if you want to make long railroad car beds, they are absolutely great. I've had those in the past. But don't try to do it all at once. Do more every year. You'll always be buying more mushroom soil. You'll never get to the end of the season and wish you had bought less.
Gotcha. Can I ask you one more thing? There is a walnut tree. Would that affect the raised beds, or should I completely stay away from the walnut tree completely anything?
It will prevent tomatoes from growing within 150 feet of the drip line.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But because you're building raised beds, make them high enough, especially towards the walnut, and as long as the roots of the two plants don't interact, there shouldn't be any problem.
Oh, okay.
But you've just given yourself another great reason to build raised beds, because if you put the tomatoes in the soil, they would definitely meet the root hairs of the black walnut and die.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right?
Great. Thank you very much, Mike.
All right, Brad. Good luck.
I'll go get started.
Yes, sir.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Catherine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just ducky today, Catherine. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Very well. Glad to talk to you.
I'm glad to talk to you. Where is Catherine very well?
Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Ah, horse country. Great, beautiful area out there. All right, what can we do for Catherine in Westchester, PA?
Well, I had signed up through the Arbor Day Foundation and received 12 flowering trees.
You mean twigs, right?
Sorry?
You mean twigs.
Yes, I got 12 sticks with roots. Only I just got them last week, and it's like winter. So I'm not sure what to do with them to protect them through the winter season to be able to then do something with them in the spring.
It shouldn't be a problem. We're hearing this from a lot of people. I don't know what went wrong and why they're shipping them out in the middle of winter. But, you know, these are, you know, they're all deciduous trees, right? So they're dormant right now. You got a couple of options. If you have really light, loose soil outside that's not frozen, like a raised bed, you could dig. Okay. Well, those who are listening with a similar problem, you could dig a hole 6 inches to a foot deep and just lay them down on their side, cover them back up, and dig them out again in the spring. Conversely, do you have a refrigerator that will not have fruit in it?
Yes, we don't tend to put fruit in our refrigerator, okay. so that's not an issue.
So what I would do is I would wrap the little stickies up in like 3 or 4 layers of paper towels, and then I would just loosely rubber band that, and then I would put them just in the coldest spot in the refrigerator and plant them in the spring. I would not freeze them. I would not wrap them in plastic. I would check them once every, say 2 weeks. And if the paper towels have all dried out, I would freshen them up. I would check them to see if there's any mold developing on the inner trees. And if there is, I would just give them a good bath in cold water in the sink and then start the process all over again. And then, you know, a couple of weeks after things start growing again in the spring and the ground has thawed, you can begin planting them where you want them to grow, unless you want to grow them out in pots for a couple of years until they get, you know, to some kind of size.
Right. And that's what I was thinking to do. So that's all right to start them in pots?
Yeah. But I would do that in the spring.
In the spring, right.
Yeah. And then keep them outside, keep them well watered, rig up something to protect them from deer and rabbits. Then at the very end of the summer, after the last heat wave, then I would take them out of their pots and plant them in the ground. Because, you know, then they're going to start to get, you need more specialized equipment. But there's certainly many advantages to growing them in pots for their first summer and then planting them in the early fall.
Okay, that sounds great. Now, when I wrap them up in the paper towel, can I wrap them all together or should they each be wrapped individually?
No, I would wrap them all together as a bundle.
Okay. Oh, that's fantastic.
And when you plant them, make sure the area drains well. You know, sometimes sun isn't the best, sometimes this isn't the best. Make sure the area drains well, and even though they'll be small, plant them high so you can see the root flare above ground.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no lollipops.
Yeah, gotcha. Oh, that's great information, and I'm glad I can save them for till I can get them planted. That's wonderful news.
Yeah, this is what the people who sent them to you are doing. They have giant refrigerators full of these things.
Ah, okay. Perfect.
All right,
well,
Kath.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate your help.
My absolute pleasure. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Tony, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Tony. Where are you, sir?
Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Tony in Altoona?
I had a question about pawpaw trees. I've got about a dozen of them planted. I live sort of up against the woods. I've got 1.5 acres, 2 acres, and it's mostly wooded. A little bit wet in some areas. Last spring, I had 3 pawpaw trees that got sick. They began leafing out in April, and as May came along, the leaves seemed to start growing. Then they kind of curled and died. And I actually took out one of the plants and sent it to the plant pathology lab at Penn State. They examined it, and they sent back a report, and their conclusion was that it was from ambrosia beetles, that they had somehow infested this tree, and that a fungus had taken it over and killed the tree, and the other two trees looked similar.
Okay, so thanks to my good friend Lee Reich, we did a show with him and Howard Garrett, the dirt doctor from down in Texas. We did a special show to celebrate my 17th anniversary where Fruit Master Lee and Dirt Doctor Howard were on with me. And a question came in, and I don't know if I had never encountered this or I'd just forgotten it, but Lee immediately identified the problem as the ambrosia beetle because the symptoms are like nothing else you see in nature. They burrow into the tree, and then they push out this little solidified sticker, toothpick of sawdust. And it's very distinctive. And that's the sign of ambrosia beetles, is you've got these little things sticking out of sawdust that look like toothpicks all over your tree.
I don't recall seeing those, but I do have mulch around the base of these trees, and maybe it got lost in that. No, man, no.
It's very dramatic.
Oh, okay.
It's very dramatic. No, it doesn't get lost. It looks like your trees have the stigmata or something.
Oh, well, I don't recall seeing that.
Okay,
but,
so why do you have mulch around the bottom of your trees?
Well, the mulch isn't right up against the base of the tree. It's not up against the trunk. There's a zone around there of about 6 inches without mulch. These trees are planted in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that I have some mulch around there is to keep competition down from all the things that are in the woods that are constantly trying to, you know, grow into areas. So, I mean, the other trees that I have are doing fine.
Good, good. What are you using for mulch?
Wood chips. You know, I get them from a local landscape outfit.
Okay, so
I've known for quite some time.
So they're arborist wood chips. They're not the dyed crap.
No, okay. They're not that.
Well, all I can tell you, it's probably not ambrosia beetles. Where are you getting your pawpaw trees?
I've gotten them from a couple different sources. The main source was Edible Landscaping in Afton, Virginia. And the interesting thing about the three trees that were affected is they had all been in the ground at least 5 years, and none of them had grown very well. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think they were all grafted varieties. I have some seedling varieties also. So I think it was the grafted trees that had this problem. And as I mentioned, you know, compared to the other trees that were, you know, contemporaneous and planted at the same time, they were all struggling. So I don't know, could it even be something like allelopathy or something like from a nearby tree or something where they're not getting along?
I'd say yes if there's black walnuts, but pawpaws are Native Americans. They've grown up around black walnuts. The only thing I can suggest is that they're not getting enough light back in the woods. I'm reading right now a brand new book on pawpaws that I'm finding very interesting. If you want to, like, I don't know if you have Kindle or if you want to go on Amazon, but there's a great book about pawpaws that just came out, and I'm just reading it now and increasing my pawpaw knowledge. But, you know, for a Native American tree that's, quote, pest-free and everything, these guys are having a heck of a time getting them to grow and being there on that one day when the fruit is, like, perfect. I mean, it's a very short harvest time, and they're very perishable. And what my understanding is they like to grow on stream banks. They like to be near water and be exposed to a lot of light. And that would be the opposite in a forest. All the other plants are sucking all the water away from them, and they might not be getting enough water or light. Do you have any options of planting them out where there'd be less competition?
I have, you know, like I said, about a dozen. And I planted two last year where I tried to create just what you said. There's a almost permanently wet area. It's not quite a creek, but it's sort of this marshy area that runs right through this one area. And I planted the new trees sort of on a little bit of a berm right adjacent to that.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that will be an ideal habitat for them. But actually, I have some that are way up in the woods, and some of them are doing just fine. And there's less water there, and so certainly they've been competing with other trees.
Right, and that's what I'm reading in this book, is they are resistant to cultivation, but when you find them wild in the woods, just keep going back to that spot. That's the preferred pawpaw method. But I'll tell you what, I'm just starting on this book, so two things I want you to do. I want you to go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, Garden Answers A to Z. I know we got a question up there about pawpaws, but I probably wrote it like 12 years ago, so I don't remember a lot right now, and I don't grow them personally. So I want you to read that, and then stay tuned, because we do plan to have this author on the show.
Oh, great. Great. Well, I listen to you regularly. I really, really enjoy listening to you. So I'll stay tuned. And, I mean, maybe this is a one-time thing. Like I said, none of the other trees were affected. So
this book is ripe with pawpaw failures. So you may be in the hierarchy of growers, man.
One thing I would say is it seems like maybe the less you do with them, the better off they are.
Absolutely. That's why the ones in the woods are always going to be good.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Master Gardener's Spring Symposium in Fayetteville, North Carolina on March 25th and in beautiful State College, PA, April 6th through the 8th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the real story behind those rooted living supermarket herbs and more of your rooted phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be getting to the question of the week. What is the story with those supermarket herbs that are sold with their roots still attached? Are we supposed to be able to plant those and get them to keep growing? We'll tell you why that's rarely effective and give you a much better option after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Andrea, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing today?
I am just ducky, Andrea. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good.
And where is Andrea doing pretty good?
In Reading, Pennsylvania.
Ah, home of the Fightin' Phils, one of the great minor league ball teams and ballparks in the country.
Yes.
So what can we do for Andrea in Reading?
Well, I'd like to talk about an issue I'm having with my tomatoes.
Okay, what's wrong with your tomatoes?
Well, 5 years ago when we established the garden, they were beautiful. And as the years passed, we were having problems with the leaves turning yellow. And mm-hmm. I did research, and I basically, over the internet, I'm finding out that I am getting early blight.
Year after year? I seriously doubt that.
Well,
now, Andrea, one thing we have to stop and say. Tomatoes are one of the most disease-prone plants we grow in our garden. There's like, maybe down south there's 350 different diseases. Maybe up here where we are in Pennsylvania there's only like 200 or 250. But 90% of them, the only symptom is yellow leaves. So, you know, that's not going to help you. Now, are you growing in flat earth or raised beds?
Raised beds.
Okay. So there's walking lanes. You don't step on the ground near where your tomatoes are growing.
No. We're actually in a row home, so we have three beds off to the side that are 4 foot by 8 foot, and they're
Perfect.
Kind of terraced a little bit.
Excellent. Excellent. That sounds great. That sounds great. How do you support your plants?
With metal trellises. We actually have these square trellises that fold up.
Right.
And in the ground, they come up to about 4 foot.
Okay, that's
And I do generally grow more than 4 feet, so I put another set of trellis on top of that.
Excellent, excellent. And now, perhaps the final question. You say you have three raised beds. So
yes.
You're growing these tomatoes in the same beds year after year.
Well, this past year, I switched the bed.
Okay.
And I think the first year we just had too many plants in the bed and we crowded them.
That's
normal.
So this
year I put three plants in and we totally lost one.
Right.
And I basically had one that grew okay.
Okay,
for me,
okay,
but we didn't
no,
get no. enough fruit to can.
Okay, no, no, no. Don't tell me your troubles, Andrea. I'll start telling you mine. Now, you got three raised beds. How many tomato plants are you growing?
Well, initially we were trying to grow six.
Okay. So are you telling me that one of these beds has been free of tomatoes growing in it for 3 years?
Yes, but my herbs are there, so I can't necessarily move those.
Okay. See, what I think is going on is the most common problem with tomatoes, which is verticillium wilt in our area. As you move further south, it's more fusarium wilt. But it's kind of the same disease with the same symptoms. When you grow tomatoes in a spot for the first year, they grow just fine. Down at the soil line underneath by the roots, there's a little symbiotic relationship going on, but nothing happens. The second year, the symbiosis becomes stronger, and now there are organisms that are colonizing the soil around the tomato roots. It's perfectly natural. It happens to everybody, whether you're raised or flat, organic or chemical.
Okay.
By year three, this soil organism, again called verticillium in Pennsylvania, has now built up to a level where shortly after the tomatoes reach about 2 or 3 feet, the bottom leaves are going to turn yellow, and the yellowing is going to progress up the plant. Generally, in that third year, it's what we call self-limiting. If the tomatoes are growing fast, you just pull off the bottom leaves, and you still get a good amount of fruit. By year four, if you've ignored this, the yellowing starts faster, progresses faster, and the plant's dead by the end of July.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the answer is to rotate your plants. And I know everybody says you should rotate your entire garden, but most of us don't have the space for that. So
right.
This coming summer, you have two big choices, or three if you have room to build a new raised bed.
That I don't.
Okay. So choice number one, you say you have an herb garden where no tomatoes have grown for years.
Yeah, there's a little space. I could probably fit one plant.
No. When spring comes and your herbs start growing again, you're going to move them to one of the tomato beds.
Okay.
And you're going to do this so it ends in the evening and you water it really well and the plants will all stabilize. Herbs are very hardy. And then you're going to grow tomatoes in the herb bed where you will get a fabulous harvest. But don't go nuts. I mean, I would not grow more than 2, maybe 3 tomato plants in a 4x8 bed. Now you've got room. You've got room for other plants at the base. You can grow more herbs down there, a little pepper plants or something like that. But you have to keep track of when tomatoes have been growing in a bed. Now your herb bed you can use for tomatoes for 2 years. Nothing bad is going to happen. By the end of that 2 years, you can move the herbs again, and then that bed will be able to be used again. Or if you just grew peppers or squash or something else in the third bed, after 2 years, you could put tomatoes in there again. The verticillium won't be completely gone, but it'll be greatly diminished. Ideally, you should follow a three-year rotation, 3 years without tomatoes. I'm giving you permission to do it for 2 years. But the important thing is that you don't keep following tomatoes with tomatoes. No one can do that. It can't be done. The plants will all die horribly, and you will end up with a winter free of your homemade tomato sauce.
Right.
And it's a lot simpler to solve than late blight, early blight, or anything else.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Good luck, Andrea.
Thank you, Mike. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Gloria, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about my Christmas cactus. They have grown so large. I have them exposed. I have very good exposure in my den. So I have them under my window, and I've had them a number of years. They got so large that I trimmed them about a month and a half ago. I really cut them short, and they grew back very nicely, but I have no blooms.
Well, of course not, Gloria. Now, where are you? Where do you live?
In Philadelphia.
Where?
Northeast Philadelphia.
Where?
Welsh Road.
Okay. My wife comes from that area originally.
Oh, good.
So, Gloria, what you did was you really seized defeat from the jaws of victory. Does your Christmas cactus typically bloom around Christmas or Thanksgiving?
Yes. Sometimes they bloom twice a year.
But one of the times is closer to Christmas than Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, that's around the time I must have trimmed them, about a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Yeah. The so-called Christmas cactus is a family of three. The most familiar one, the most common one, is actually called a Thanksgiving cactus because it blooms closer to Thanksgiving.
Yes.
True Christmas cactus are getting harder and harder to find. And then there's what's called an Easter cactus that often blooms again in the spring. You must have noticed, if you looked at all when you were given this thing a haircut, you must have noticed the big buds that were at the ends of the parts you were cutting off.
I don't think I even noticed it. I just cut.
Well, I don't think you've done any permanent damage. I think all you did was destroy your bloom for this one set. Because, as you said, they grew back heartily. So, obviously, they're getting the right food, water, sun. So, what's going to happen is the plant will continue to regrow. Keep an eye on the tips of the branches. Uh-huh. You will see the buds swell. You will see the buds swell a couple of weeks before they're going to burst open with those pretty little flowers.
Oh, I have another year then.
Well, you said yours has occasionally bloomed twice a year.
Yes.
You may get flowering in the spring. You may have actually triggered flowering in the spring.
Okay.
So enjoy the flowers next time. Don't be anxious. And then when the flowers fade, you know, those flowers, they kind of dry up and shrivel up. They don't look very attractive. If you think you need to give the plant a little bit of pruning to keep it under control, that's the time to do it, after the flowers have faded. That way there's no chance you can be cutting off flower buds because they haven't begun to produce the new buds yet. And actually trimming off a little bit right after flowering will encourage the plant to bloom as many times as it can.
Oh, good. And how about I have violets there too? They're also doing well, but they're not blooming. Do they rebloom?
African violets?
Yes.
African violets are supposed to be blooming 90% of the time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Are you giving them a good amount of water without drowning them? And do they get, you know, decent dappled light, not bright light?
I do. I have a great light from my window in my den.
Well, great light might be too much for them.
Okay.
African violets are kind of in-between plants. The line on them, like orchids, is they prefer the light from a south or east window, but through a curtain, through a light curtain.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mike.
All right. Well, thank you, Gloria.
Okay, and I love your program.
Thank you very much. I hope you get a good bloom next time on your cactus.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Can you make those rooted supermarket herbs continue to grow? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, could you get us started with this week's question, please?
I sure can, Mike. Michelle, who lives near Cape Cod, Massachusetts, writes, I'm an amateur gardener and cook. I buy live herbs at the grocery store for $2.99 each and repeatedly try, but fail, to keep them alive for more than 2 weeks in my kitchen. My house is on the water and gets a lot of light, but my kitchen faces north and west. And after just a few days, cilantro, parsley, basil, sage, dill, and everything but mint droop and then die. Please help. I set my alarm every Saturday to catch your show with my coffee. I have to say that I have had the exact same experience. I must have bought a dozen of those big basil plants that still have their roots attached, but none of them survive when I pot them up or try and plant them outside.
Ah, that's because you're giving them their very first taste of dirt, and their little roots don't have the muscle to handle it. Those very popular basil plants, sold with their roots still attached, have been grown hydroponically in water with regular applications of nutrient solution. The roots grow long and happy, but they don't face any kind of resistance. And then they don't have the strength to grow out into soil or potting mix. Same with the gourmet lettuces that are sold this way. Those roots are so enticing, but they're not going to survive being moved into a more natural environment.
So are you saying it's impossible?
Well, I messed around with these things a couple of times, and I've had a little bit of success growing them in a kind of continued hydroponic situation. Standing them up with some kind of support so that the roots are underwater, but the plant is not. If you're going to try this at home, kids, I'd advise using only rainwater, well water, or distilled water, not city tap water. And I'd change that water every other day or so.
And you'd grow them in a bright window?
In winter? No way. There is no such thing. The further north you live, the less hours of daylight you have in the winter to begin with. And the angle of winter light just isn't good for photosynthesis. Maybe you could use a south or east-facing window for this in the summer, but in the summer you might as well set it up outdoors. So unless you're in a really warm winter area, I'd turn to artificial light. As we've been suggesting a lot on the show lately, a couple of bright LEDs and normal light fixtures placed close to the plants should be great.
And what about food?
Well, most hydroponic systems use chemical fertilizer, but I think that light applications of liquid kelp would be ideal in this kind of situation. Otherwise, I'd experiment with a diluted tea made from compost or worm castings.
Now, she says that she does better with mint.
Because you can't kill mint. Everybody knows that. Seriously, I needed some mint recently for proper mojito making.
Okay, wait a second. You still have the mojito problem you developed on your trip to Cuba?
It's only a problem when I can't find the mint. Anyway, a few months back, I saw a rack of these living herb plants in my grocery store. They were mostly the standard bare root basils, but there were a couple of mint plants in there in actual pots in soil. So I took them home, potted them up into larger containers, and they're all still alive and doing well.
Because they're mint, and mint is hard to kill?
Well, that and the fact that they grew up with their roots in some sort of soil as opposed to being raised by Aquaman. Now, several of the herbs she names are not long-lived to begin with. Basil, cilantro, and dill are all famous for going to seed super fast. That's why we tell people to sow successive runs of them in the garden, so they'll always have access to some good quality plants. And the size of the hydroponic basils you see in the market suggests to me that those plants were ready to go to seed and be done pretty soon no matter what.
Okay, so forget about keeping them alive longer than a week or two and just use them as soon as possible after you buy them.
You know, that's the smart money. And if you really want your own homegrown herbs over the winter, especially in a cold clime, invest in a little system that includes lights that you can adjust and a platform that allows you to sow seeds in containers under the lights. One extra nice thing about herbs is that they don't take months to ripen and mature. You can pick them anytime you can see them.
Microgreens.
Absolutely. The middle ground between sprouts and full-grown plants is the hottest thing in market gardening right now. You can have baby plants ready to harvest in just a few weeks. And those tiny plants are packed with much more nutrition and flavor per gram than their full-size parents.
Your only real limit is the amount of space you're willing to devote to your little micro farm. If you can make room for three or four growing stations, you should be able to harvest a good amount of herbs and microgreens for salads.
Well, that sure was a lot of hopefully helpful advice about growing herbal, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes! My producer is threatening to grow me hydroponically if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore. At garden@whyy.org. And please include your location or we won't read it. Nah. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you are about to email us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Diana Martinez. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website well-watered. Aquatic Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, is all wet. I'm Aquaman's pal, Mike McGrath, and I don't care what our finny friends say. I'm growing in dirt to my dying day. Or, you know, at least till I see you again next week. One of the true joys of summer is homegrown sweet corn. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how to extend that awesome harvest this coming season. Plus your fabulous phone calls.